The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends once again, which is supported as ever by Volley Entertainment, formerly known as Volley Music. My name is Tim Ingham, the founder of MBW, and Talking Trends sees us look behind the headlines of a couple of big stories that have broken in the past week, or indeed even further back in time. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Los Angeles-based Charlie Daughtry. Charlie's a music industry veteran and the founder of businesses including Daughtry Songs, CC Music Royalties, and Best Quality M&M, which, as I've said before, manages the IP of legacy artists. Charlie is a veteran of working at various labels during his time in the business, including Def Jam and Columbia, and he spent nearly two decades at the company we now know as Disney Music Group. I repeat the artists that he's worked with every single time we do this podcast, but I think probably the most knockout one and one of his closest associations would have been with the band Queen. Charlie, welcome back to Talking Trends. Please pick a topic, let me know what it is, and give your view on it on something that's happened in the music business this week.
Good to be back, Tim. And I would like to talk about the news this week about Deezer, where they are culling a bunch of tracks. And the issue here is, I don't want to just talk about flowery things. It's utopianism, which is a part of the tech movement of our times and has always been in music, which is that there are regularly subjects where people say, if we just do this, everything will be perfect. Everyone will be treated fairly. The lesser among us will be lifted up. The higher among us will be cut down to the rightful size. And it's yet to be true because of human nature and because there are exceptional performances in the world. And in our corner of the business, in the music business, those exceptional performances tend to be that small percentage of artists who make great music that appeals to large audiences, be that hundreds of thousands or millions of people. And they are the rarest of the rare. It is the most valuable thing in music. And it's not the same as when Charlie and Tim get together, put together a track and decide that we'd like to put it up digitally. And there are way more of us than there are of them. And if you're going to have a product that works effectively, that disseminates hit music of any genre, of any style, in any country, all over the world, and that's a lot of different options, you necessarily cannot treat the new Ariana Grande track exactly the same way you do Charlie and Tim sing. It's not the same thing. And it is necessary to, whether we want to call it curate or gatekeep, or if, to the extent that the tracks that are valuable only to us overwhelm the tracks that are valuable to a very wide audience that gives these particular DSPs a reason to exist, then they need to do work to curate their product offering. That's my interpretation of what went on with Deezer this week. Your thoughts?
So just in case anyone listening hasn't seen the story, Deezer has announced via Music Business Worldwide, I'm pleased to say, but Deezer has announced that they are culling, as you put it, 26 million tracks from its service. If you include podcasts, we think that comes to about 13% of the audio content on Deezer. It would be a higher percentage if we were just looking at music, I think. And a couple of things really stood out to me about that. A long, long time ago, I had an off-the-record conversation with a gentleman called Bob Roback, who used to run InGrooves for many years. InGrooves now is basically, the best way to put it, I imagine, is the kind of technology that underpins Virgin Music Group, or much of what Virgin Music Group do as things get bought and consolidated, etc. That's happened. But Bob ran InGrooves when it was a hot, fast-growing artist services and distribution company. And he was the first person to say to me, as I say, off the record, but all these years later, I'm unmasking him. I'm sure he wouldn't mind. He was to say to me that the music industry's biggest problem, its biggest virus, is insists on treating every piece of content as if it has the same value. And that was a guy running a distributor that wasn't a DIY distribution company, was curated. So it would only just work with artists that it signed, if you like, it would handpick them. But InGrooves was part of this accelerant, or was an accelerant rather, to the situation we have today, where to your point, we're seeing these 100,000 uploads a day. And according to Luminate stats, if I remember rightly, about a quarter of the music on all of these streaming services, you know, between 100 and 200 million tracks, around a quarter of that doesn't get played at all. So I think you're right. I think there's certainly a discussion here around whether or not the music industry should have seen this coming and whether the horse is bolted and Deezer deleting these tracks is too little too late, really, to the tech utopian ideal that you painted very articulately at the start. I think the thing that probably stuck out the most for me about the Deezer statement was they talked about removing noise. So we can all have a debate around what noise is. One of my most listened to musical genres is sort of lo-fi for focus. I use music for application as well as music for pleasure. And the music I use for application has a real value to me. And Deezer effectively thinks it can create that music via AI for your music for application. So music for focus or music to help you sleep or music to help you relax. So that was the first part. I thought that was interesting. I don't know within the 26 million tracks if there is going to be the most amazing gamma wave focus beats musician that's being washed away that could have improved my professional life, could have improved my life. So that was one thing. Is there some gems being chucked out in a baby with bathwater analogy, etc.? The second thing was that in its list of content types that Deezer said it was removing, it did say that it was removing sort of low quality content and it was removing, for example, an album that has the same track repeated multiple times for no good reason, which is just someone clearly trying to game the system. And again, this noise. But they also mentioned fake artists. And I'm very, very keen on discussion around fake artists because, for starters, I believe Music Business Worldwide coined that phrase. But more importantly, in 2015, that was a landmark article for Music Business Worldwide, which was our investigation into what we called fake artists on the Spotify platform. And this is a 20-minute discussion, so I'll do my best to keep it short. But fake artists, under the definition that I and we put around them, were artists who were using a pseudonym for which there was no online footprint whatsoever for the real artists behind that music, the guy or girl in the studio creating the music, then putting it out under a quote-unquote fake name, nor was there any footprint for the fakery, the unreal artist that they had created. The reason I think we went hard on that story at the time is because, frankly, there was always a suspicion and continues to be a suspicion, although various parties have denied it, that there is an economic advantage to the platform to what channel or push audiences towards this fake artist content, i.e. somehow, and it may be to do with whether or not performing rights get paid, for one example, that there is a financial incentive for the platforms to push people towards these fake artists. So anyway, I just found that really interesting because, going back to my point about is there a great focus musician being washed away here, some of this fake artist stuff, to be honest with you, is put out through musicians who work with Epidemic Sound in a lot of cases, which is a Swedish sort of production music, traditionally a production music house that's evolved into various areas. But some of these are super talented people. When I listened to actually some of the fake artists, even as I was writing the expose on fake artists, I was listening to fake artists and their focus music because it was helping me do my job. So I just wonder, basically, within the 26 million, under definitions that Deezer seems to have, if not adopted from Universal Music Group, then at least been influenced by the worldview of Universal Music Group, if some really good music that could help people is being cut from the platform because it's had to put, to your original point, arbitrary rules around what is noise, what is not noise, what is high quality, what is not high quality, etc.
Yeah, and look, I would say there's a... It's like, is it possible? Sure. In the extent that we're gadflies in the music business, we can point out the potential problems that may happen. I would also say there's a potential opportunity. In your example, if what I would call music for a purpose, which is sometimes use the word industrial music, but that's its own genre that I don't mean to confuse. But if it's made for relaxation or some of those types of going to sleep, getting up in the morning, you're not looking for popular music tracks. If the big DSPs make the error of cutting that material, then somebody like Calm, which I believe is licensed correctly, has the opportunity to put out scads of that music. And all of a sudden, Tim, who's looking for his music to relax at the end of the day, because that's how he winds down, starts using Calm. More money's to be made. The market works properly. And either they correct back to make sure that those tracks are represented, or they say, well, we're really the popular music outlet, and we are going to allow the Calms of the world to perpetrate that, or anyone else, Amazon for a long time, even because of their audience being, or their consumers being somewhat older in a different demo, tended to reflect adult music more. I think that's the beauty of dynamic change, is that a new product that, if they do make that mistake, a new product will develop and it will super serve it. And it can be the ultimate source of that. At one time, Windham Hill Records based their entire repertoire and sold tens of millions of albums on that very idea that they were specializing in sort of a emotional instrumental music that was not intended for media airplay. So I do think that stuff will work its way out. It's not impossible that something gets edited, but it's also with the lack of friction in distribution now, someone has to stand up and say, we are going to curate this to a degree. Here's how we're doing it. If they make a mistake, they can correct that mistake. But otherwise, it's overwhelming for music that clearly has great value and clearly a large audience is looking for. And they have to maintain their ability to serve those people because they pay the rent.
I'll have to move us on to the second topic. I could do the whole discussion on this. What you've talked about there just triggered a couple of thoughts. First of all, the kind of messy incentives of the music business, the distributors who are effectively taking commission from the volume of music that they move from one place, i.e. their servers, to another place, i.e. the digital platforms servers, they are incentivized to move as much music as possible if their model works that way. And so I wonder how they're feeling about having basically 26 million tracks cut and then thrown back at them. We don't want this anymore, thanks. I'm sure that there are some interesting opinions from that part of the business. And then the other part, just hearing you talk about music for purposes, comes to mind. Deezer's original pitch on this when they struck a deal with Universal last year and revealed some of the thinking behind what they considered noise and not noise, is they effectively said, and I'm putting words in their mouth here, we're going to block this stuff from coming onto our platform in future. We're going to cut a bunch of it at a certain point, which we've just seen them do. And then we're going to create our own music for focus, music for study, music for relaxation, using artificial intelligence, effectively going to be first party music that doesn't generate any royalty, allowing all the royalties to stay within a pool of quote unquote real artists. Now, what I find really interesting about that idea is, I'm saying, is the AI music going to be as good as the fake art, those brilliant fake artists? Many of them were, I'm very happy to say, super talented people, even though I didn't really know who they were. But last year, Universal Music Group actually struck a deal with a company called Endel. I don't know if you remember this deal. Endel is an AI music company that has its own app. And to your point, its pitch, I think the CEO is called Oleg, its pitch is we can basically feed the algorithm that we can prompt the AI with almost scientific level data. So it's like, if you want to use music for wellness, I think they call it, but music for focus, for example, we have the empirical data that shows that this particular AI made music that we've made will do X and Y to your brain better than someone who's just guessing at it. And I do think that's a really interesting application for AI as we move forward. Anyway, as I said, I've got to move us on to the second topic, which I haven't left us too much time to talk about, which is unfortunate because there's a lot of explanation I'm going to have to do. But the second topic is about manipulated audio and particularly manipulated audio on TikTok. And this is because of a story that MBW published on Thursday, March 14th. And there was a lot going on in that story. So I'm just going to try and simplify it as best I can. But effectively, Universal Music Group, as we know, as we've discussed indeed, Charlie, has refused to continue its license for TikTok on recorded music, where it has about 3 million tracks in its repertoire, owned or distributed, controlled repertoire. And also on music publishing, where it has cuts in songs, if you like. It has bits of songs or full songs across 4 million tracks. Some of those overlap. I've read an analyst, Daniel Kervin at JP Morgan, said that he thinks that when you overlap publishing with the recorded music, we're talking about 5 million pieces of recorded music that Universal Music Group's lapsed license with TikTok means will no longer appear on TikTok if TikTok's doing its job, which it appears to be doing. Those tracks, those 5 million-ish tracks, no longer appear on TikTok, except they do. Because what's happening is TikTok users who don't have to use a distributor to upload audio to the service are manipulating original songs. You've probably seen these phrases like nightcore or sped up song. They are speeding them up and they are uploading them onto TikTok's platform. This is happening, by the way, this isn't just a TikTok problem. This is happening all over YouTube. I talked all about an example called Skibbity Toilet, which is a hilarious thing to say out loud, but it's also a genuine cultural phenomenon amongst Gen Alpha. And Skibbity Toilet is based on a pretty much, I would say 70% based on a sped up Timbaland, Justin Timberlake and Nelly Furtado song. So this is happening on other platforms. But obviously the most egregious thing when it comes to TikTok is that TikTok isn't licensed to even have the original versions. That if we're talking about a sped up Universal song, which many of them are, or a sped up Universal controlled song, TikTok isn't licensed to have the original recording, let alone a manipulated version. Now, Universal Music Group, according to my sources, since February 1st, has sent over 37,000 individual takedown requests to TikTok. So what that means is they have identified a quote-unquote sound on TikTok as being a manipulated version of a Universal controlled recording, and they have sent an individual takedown request for 37,000, more than 37,000 of these tracks. That has led to the muting, because TikTok is actually complying once it gets these requests, that has led to the muting of around 120 million videos on TikTok. Now, my big question really about all this and why it blows my mind is, A, why doesn't TikTok have the technology to stop this happening? We're not talking about songs that have been reversed, spliced up, turned upside down, and cannot be distinguished from the original version. We're talking about songs in some cases that have been moved up 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 BPM. It blows my mind, really, that TikTok and other services, other user upload services, a company called Pex has pointed the finger at YouTube and also pointed the finger at SoundCloud and others for not identifying this stuff. But that blows my mind. And second of all, why is it up to Universal Music Group to spend its money, its resources, policing this stuff when it's a platform problem? So those are the things that are on my mind about that topic this week.
Well, specifically, YouTube, who always like to broadcast the strength of their digital fingerprint and that sort of technology, the question would be, since they've successfully showed they have a very close variant of that, why doesn't it pick it up? With TikTok, they're in an adverse situation with Universal. They have to show the courts, obviously, that they are complying with the law. But let's face it, I don't know that they're sitting around in their meetings saying, hey, let's do something to really help Universal out this week. But YouTube is priding themselves for the last decade on having solid relationships with the music companies, having negotiations and tug of wars. But my question would be, they've got the most demonstrable solid technology that kind of addresses this issue. Why isn't it working for these sped up tracks when everybody would acknowledge that if it's licensed, it should be there? If the artist has no problem with it. I have worked with artists who absolutely cannot tolerate people messing with their performance, which they put sometimes years of effort and great expense to put together, and they just don't want it used that way. Obviously, Neil Young is very prominent on a lot of those issues. Not that I've dealt with Neil directly myself, but the reality is that at the end of the day, they are recognized as the creator. If they should be compensated, and they should be given within the parameter, and they could be very open to it. There are the other kind of artists that are like, I love every bit of technology. I love every bit of this. As long as you pay me, I'm fine. Go and do.
You can see evidence of those artists, to your point. The polar opposites to Neil Young, the ones embracing this saying, manipulate away, basically. There is a playlist on Spotify called Sped Up Songs. I'd recommend just going and looking at it because it's really interesting. In January, I had a gentleman on the podcast named Rusty Turek. He is the CEO of a company called Pex. I will offer you some data from Pex shortly just to kind of round off our discussion on this. But the focus at that time wasn't this manipulated audio going up onto TikTok, SoundCloud, YouTube, etc. And actually, YouTube, from what I can see, just worth me saying, just from my own research, it does seem to me that YouTube is hotter on policing this than TikTok. That's just my own anecdotal research, although Pex's data does seem to back that up. What I talked about with Rusty was actually the sped up tracks that are getting onto Spotify and Tidal and other audio streaming services. And that, in a way, had a bigger downside for the record industry, because these sped up tracks that were becoming cultural phenomenons, mini cultural phenomenons on TikTok and other social platforms, being shared, soundtracking people's videos, they were typically being credited, or in a lot of cases were being credited, to the person that did the speeding up. They didn't credit the original artist. Now, when I went on that Spotify sped up songs playlist in January, quite a few, I would say somewhere between 25 and 50% of the songs on there didn't credit the original artist whose music had been manipulated. And the big problem with that, of course, as I'm sure you can work out, is if the artist isn't being credited, then the artist also isn't being paid. They are not getting paid from the Spotify royalty pool. However, when I went on Sped Up Songs on Spotify yesterday, because I thought it would be worth writing about this in the article, actually, it looks like most of the songs now on Spotify, if not all of the Sped Up Songs on Spotify, are officially endorsed, artist-credited, manipulated audio. So the original artist has given an endorsement and is credited and is getting paid, crucially, by the popularity of those songs on Spotify. So I guess the question at the end of all this, Pex's data, I said I'd cite some. They said that 38% of sounds on TikTok today, that is over a third of sounds on TikTok today, are, according to their technology, manipulated audio. So my question for the industry, and I'll probably have to end on this question, Charlie, is if Spotify can clamp down on it. Why can't the social platforms?
Oh, very good. Very good. So I'm sorry, I was mulling for a moment that you were going to say the long arc of history is towards justice, even in the music business, which I thought would be a good way to end.
That's probably too philosophical even for me, Charlie. But I think you've left us on a highbrow note, so I shan't spoil it. Charlie Datchery, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you listening have enjoyed Talking Trends.